The Guardian. Football Weekly.
It's Football Weekly Extra. Today, Christmas season to be jolly festive special ahoy. In the Premier League, everyone's got games in hand and the table's straining with some real turkeys. In Italy, Inter hand portly red-faced fella the sack and tell him to take his presents elsewhere. God bless us all. Today's pod takes a big look ahead to the big Boxing Day round of fixtures. Arsenal-Chelsea, Fulham-West Ham, Clint Dempsey against Rob Green again, perhaps. We give Sid a call, because it can be lonely at this time of year. And Real Madrid have just won 8-0. We say goodbye to Benitez and help Steve McLaren with his packing. Enjoy your post and generally round everything up in today's Football Weekly Extra. Hello, everybody, and Merry Christmas to you all.
Put a bit of effort into it, Jimbo.
Oh, this is effort.
Ebenezer Jimbo. As we've been
you want a Christmas carol riff, don't you, Sean Cratchit?
No, not particularly, but you were just, you know, sort of grumbling a bit earlier.
I wasn't grumbling.
I just thought you should cheer up a bit.
I wasn't grumbling. You're thinking of Ebenezer Glendenning over there. Well, I'm not the Scrooge figure. I'm the ghost of a career past, I think. And on my right, we have Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
Hi there, Raphael. How are you?
Very well. How are you?
All right. You look pretty well for a man who just moved house. Yeah. All right. Christmas big time for you. Have you got the glue wine and all that?
In theory.
Okay, good. I've just been handed this piece of paper by guest producer Andy Duckworth. It says, as there's no Football Weekly next Monday, can you remind Jimbo to plug the video that's going live on Monday in which the Football Weekly crew look back over the last 12 months of football? Wow.
Why is there no football next Monday?
Why is there no Football Weekly next Monday? Sean?
Well, because the match has been played pretty much every day till next Thursday, we decided it'd be best just to have save it till next.
So it's for the listeners, basically.
Always for the listeners.
Always for the listeners. For the children.
For the children. All right, excellent. Good.
So Football Weekly has been cancelled because there's too much football.
Too much football. Yeah. All right, then.
And none of us can be bothered coming in.
No, I am. I'm here, you know.
I didn't realise we were paying him on no pod, no fee basis.
you are. Okay, let's start off with then today. Manchester City. So much to discuss as ever at Eastlands. The Everton defeat, they could have gone top. Instead, they're stuck there on exactly the same points they had this time last year when they fired Mark Hughes. They have, though, got Tevez on board, apparently. They've got Mario Balotelli, who's coming out with more funny things and wearing silly hats. And, where should we start? Tevez, what does it all mean, this Tevez business?
It means he doesn't like his children anymore and he doesn't care whether
it's his reasons. Say it isn't so, Barry. Really?
Well, he wanted to leave because he wanted to be with his children. Now he wants to stay. So the logical conclusion to draw from that is that he no longer wants to be with his children and therefore doesn't like them.
Mm.
That's what I'm saying. Others, cynics, might argue that it was all about money. And City called his bluff and threatened to sue him if he didn't fulfil his contract. And but I'm going with my theory.
All right. The public statement is that he's back on board. He wants to stay. They haven't improved his contract. But underneath it all?
Well, it's a bit like you saying, I'm leaving the pod because I've got this wonderful offer.
Right.
And then Sean says, okay. And then you say, actually, I don't really have an offer.
Ah, so you think it was the fact that there wasn't
a bit like?
Well, usually what happens, you put in a transfer request after you've agreed a transfer with the club that you're going to. They obviously hadn't done that. They'd put a transfer request in, because of personal reasons between Durapci and his handler and certain people in Manchester City's board, but also to possibly make something happen. But no one took a bite. Everybody looked at the situation, looked at his wages, and thought, there's absolutely no way we can afford him or we want him with all his baggage. So he had nowhere else to go.
Bit of a mess that Jurebchin's left Tevez in this case. Do you think this will lead to a distancing of the two parties?
Well, so far, people have tried before. It hasn't happened. And of course, with Jurebchin, there are people behind them as well who are the original investors in this whole vehicle of football fund that he set up. So there are more than two or three people involved behind the scenes, and it's difficult to know just what kind of obligations Tevez has to all these people. So it'd be, for a number of reasons, I think it'd be difficult for him to part ways with Drew Upshon. But it's left him in a very difficult spot, because at least till the summer he will be there, and everybody will know that he's there quite reluctantly.
Mm. All right, well, it wasn't a very impressive performance that came straight after the announcement that he was staying. The defeat to an Everton team who played the last half hour with 10 men, Sean.
That's right. I thought it was quite telling, the body language, when City pulled it back to 2-1. There was no celebrating, there was no high-fiving, there was no... I mean, it sounds oversimplistic to sort of want the fist pumping. I mean, it didn't do much for Tim Henman when he was at Wimbledon. But you would have thought there had been a little bit of, come on, let's get this back, and there wasn't really. And City are a really strange side to work out. They've got the joint best away record in the league, and yet they often just drift, and they have all this army of egos fighting off, and you don't know what will win out. Will it be Mancini and the team that can play very well at West Ham, or these egos fighting like cats in a sack, and then might end up just finishing fourth or fifth?
How about Everton though, scoring actual goals?
Well, yeah, and deservedly so. I mean, they've drawn a lot of games this season. They've drawn 9 games out of 17, I think. They need a strike. We've all said it before. It's a shame Landon Donovan isn't going back, as I mentioned on the previous pod.
And Tim Cahill, who's scored 9 goals for them so far, is going to be away for, upward of a month after the Christmas period. So there's a concern.
Concern as in the sense they're not going to go down, but, they're only 6 points off fifth, so... With a striker, the Europa League place isn't necessarily impossible, but Everton need that striker, and that Lewis Sahar isn't going to do it anymore.
Do you want to talk about Leighton Baines for a second?
Go on, talk about Leighton Baines for a second.
Well, it's quite interesting because Christian Erlinger, the Bayern Munich sporting director, went to see Baines for the second time in the flesh. He went to the Everton game, and of course Baines was brilliant, and there were talks. The word from Bayern is, or the unofficial word from Bayern is, that Baines very reluctant to sign for a number of reasons. They felt they kind of had the deal, but it seems that the player wants to stay at Everton, or wants to stay in England perhaps. There are, of course, these rumours that he's doesn't enjoy travelling, doesn't enjoy being away from his family that much. I'm not sure if that's the case here, but it seems that an agreement perhaps could have been reached between Bayern and Everton, but at the moment, this is from last night, they were saying that they find it tough to get Baines to commit.
All right. Baines was impressive in the game. Actually about City's performance, the defending was rubbish. Very poor. Mario Balotelli, again, failed to impress. Off the field, though, he certainly is doing wonders.
Yeah, he won the world...
Well, he won. How prestigious is this trophy? It's run by Tuttosport for a start, which doesn't
give
the Golden Boy Award. Anyway, he won this award and used the occasion to come up with some really sensible statements.
Well, he declared that he was undoubtedly the best player in the world, the obvious candidate to win it, or a young player in the world, and the obvious candidate to win it. Said he'd never heard of Jack Wilshere,
who finished second.
He beat in second place, and then said it was only a matter of time before he won the Ballon d'Or. It was a sort of stepping stone on his way to winning the Ballon d'Or.
He said also that of previous winners, only Messi was perhaps slightly better than him, as Pato quote.
Yeah, he's a very confident young man.
He said that when he does play Arsenal next time, he'll watch out for Wilshere, and perhaps he can take his Golden Boy Award along to show him what he won.
He could well have been taking the mickey when I went up to accept our award that we won last week. I flicked V's at the lads from the Football Ramble, brought the microphone stand over to this side of the stage they were sitting on, and just mocked them for the duration of my speech. But it was good-natured banter. I had met them for drinks beforehand. We're, quite good friends, and... I'm seeing other podcasters,
Right.
And, so there wasn't. But if someone reported that I had said those things without putting it in context, I'd have looked like a complete...
The context being that you'd been drinking heavily before the...
It's strange that these comments didn't make the national press.
But I really did mean them, though.
Right, okay. Okay, well, Balotelli, there you go.
Can I quickly ask about Balotelli? Sorry, I mean, you'll know more about how he was... I mean, I don't think this is, you know, this is a one-off by any means. I mean,
no, but we've talked about Balotelli loads of times, and I said some time ago, I don't think he's fixable. You know, I don't think that he's going
Well, Mourinho can fix him, and you'd think if there was anyone in the modern game that could.
Well, I don't know if Mourinho is this kind of master psychologist. I know that he does try to get players on side, but if anybody doesn't get on side with him, he'll find himself out very, very quickly. And certainly with Balotelli, he went really public really quickly with how little he thought of Balotelli. And the idea he seemed to be selling was that it was kind of not the carrot but the stick for Balotelli. Tell you, this is the only way he'll learn. But yeah, that certainly didn't work in his case. Mancini had him at Inter before, and I guess that was his quietest period, although at the time he was only about 17, 18, so maybe he hadn't yet reached his full kind of egotistical blossom. Some people, Javi Goss, for example, saying, thank God for Balotelli, the figure of the interesting footballer has returned to the Premier League. He doesn't have a posse of agents, PR men and personal security guards preventing him from speaking his mind. Others, though less impressed, one whose name you chopped off their tweet, Sean, says, why does everyone excuse Balotelli's trips just because he's young? He's 20, not 12, which, you know, a fair point. Paul Doyle putting him first player on his list of worst Premier League footballers. Would you go along with that, Raphael Honigstein?
No, I wouldn't.
Okay. All right. What about Dzeko, then? Is he going to be going, £38 million they're talking about, to Man City?
Not this January. Wolfsburg have got other problems. They don't want to also compound their problems by selling their best player. They really need to bring in players rather than sell them. And of course, they're the one club who don't need to sell because they're owned by Volkswagen, who don't run this club as a business. They run it to keep the people of Wolfsburg, who are also all employees of the local Volkswagen factory, happy. And they don't do that by selling their best player. They also... there is a suggestion that the deal has already been arranged, or that Bayern have some kind of first option on him come the summer, because of course you got the connection between the two Hoeneß brothers, who both run the clubs respectively, and there are also connections at boardroom level, because 10% of Bayern are owned by Audi, who are a subsidiary of Volkswagen.
Wow, okay.
So, but now... I mean, he will probably try and make a move happen again. He'll probably talk a lot about moving, but he did say only yesterday, and this was before Wolfsburg lost the cup game against second division Cottbus, a result that really puts McLaren's neck on the chopping block. Dzeko said it's very unlikely that he'll leave in January because he knows that Wolfsburg won't let him go, basically.
All right, well, we'll talk more about McLaren a bit later on. Next up for Man City anyway, on Boxing Day, is a trip to St James's Park to take on a Newcastle side who felt unlucky to leave without anything from Eastlands earlier on this season. Now under the stewardship of Alan Pardew, of course, Newcastle. Your thoughts on that, Sean?
Well, as I said earlier, City have the best away record in the league. If it's a really tricky league to call at the moment, because only 3 points separate the top four.
You're losing Barry over there.
Well, I mean, what's quite interesting, I personally think, is that everyone seems to think that this could be a real four-way wrestling match to the finish. But, you know, history shows that generally in English football, normally it's one or two teams. Mm. And I wonder whether there's some parallels between 1999-2000, where Leeds topped the league going into the Christmas and Millennium. United second, Sunderland third. Arsenal had lost four games, I think, were fourth. And yet then after Christmas, United romped away with it, I think got 91 points. Arsenal finished second with 73. And you wonder whether Chelsea will start, you know, if they get all their players back, will reassert themselves, whether United, if Rooney can find form, will kick on as well, or whether we will have this sort of four or five way fight, you know, for the title.
Even without finding form, they're already 2 points clear with two games in hand, so they're potentially 8 points clear. So United looking very much like the favourites at the moment. Arsenal taking on Chelsea, before you frown too much at me for that last one. Arsenal taking on Chelsea this coming Monday. Is this where we see who's United's rivals really are?
Well, I wouldn't say one game will decide that, but I think it'd be really interesting to see when Lampard, I assume, will play. Chelsea are getting some of those players that I mentioned before. I mean, they've been without Alex Tetry, Drogba, Lampard and Essien for significant parts of this season. Now you think, you know, they have their close to their first team out. they can start putting a run together, then they'll be, I think, the nearest challengers to United.
I would say it's a bigger game for Arsenal than Chelsea, especially after having lost away to United in such a meek fashion. They really need to show that they have the credentials. I think psychologically they themselves beginning to realise or beginning to suspect that it's a problem, that they can't win these big games. And you don't necessarily have to win all of them to win the title. But if they were to lose against one of the top teams again, especially at home, I think it would give them a bit of a psychological blow.
Here's a stat. The last four meetings with Arsenal and Chelsea have seen Chelsea win all four games with a goal difference of 11-1.
I just hope, I mean, Wenger's given his press conference this morning, I just hope he doesn't say, you know, talk his team up again. Oh, you know, I can feel it, our team are close. I just wish he'd say, look, you know, we play some nice football, but we have been a bit psychologically weak. Maybe we'll turn things around.
He can't admit it. He can't admit it, because the moment he admits it, then the players will use that at the back of their minds as an excuse, and they feel defeated before they get into the game.
But it's four or five times now over the last sort of year or so, stretching back, I guess, to when they played United in the Champions League, where he sort of said, we're on the verge of something big, and every time he's been proven wrong. And he just, be honest, you know, Arsenal's still a work in progress, and with Vermaelen not coming back till the end of January, they're probably not strong enough to push on.
Hmm. All right, Chelsea, in the meantime, signing 15-year-old midfielder Nathan Acker, I think, from Feyenoord. Feyenoord sporting director Leo Beenhakker is not very happy about this. It's driving me crazy, he says, that hot prospects are walking away from us like thus. The Premier League clubs spoil the market with their behaviour. Other clubs in Europe aren't doing this kind of thing, but English sides just don't care. Is it right, whipping young 15-year-olds away? And do other clubs in Europe do it, Raphael?
Other clubs do it. They're perhaps not as ruthless and aggressive.
After the Kakuta business, wasn't UEFA going to do something about this?
Yeah. Well, they're suggesting a ban on transfers of under-18s, but all these things will take years before there's an agreement. And especially if it's within Europe, there's not much you can do because there's freedom of movement and the 15-year-old is allowed to play wherever he wants. So,
All right. Okay. Finally, Barry, Sunderland are off at Man United. They haven't won there since 1968. But Barry.
But what?
But they had a 2-2 last season, didn't they, Sean? And, of course, it was only a month or two ago, they went down to Stamford Bridge, where nobody gave them a snowball's chance in a hot place, and they came away with a 3-0 win.
Yeah, they did. Sorry, I'm losing the will to live about Manchester City and every game being a maker. If Arsenal lose their next game, they will be maximum 5 points off the top of the table with half a season to go.
No, you're absolutely right.
But why do people keep trying to turn it into crisis or Armageddon? It's just boring. Manchester, I watched the first half of Manchester City Everton the other day, and then I went to watch the. I had to leave at half time to go and watch the Pogues in Brixton Academy.
Yeah.
I would rather watch the Pogues for 90 minutes every once a week.
Right.
Than Manchester City. If given the choice for the rest of my life, I would quite happily never watch Manchester City play again.
All right. Put in a written alternative request was the Pogues. To Music Weekly.
And I was looking at the stage and I was thinking, you know, at one stage McGowan went off for one of his little rests, presumably to powder his nose, and so the Pogues were down to 7 men, and then word filtered through that Everton were down to 9 men. And ten men.
Yeah.
And I still reckoned that 7-man Pogues would beat 9-man Everton at possibly anything except football.
All right.
In any discipline. But anyway, to go back to your question.
Except football, that renders all of that totally irrelevant. But anyway.
Can you think of a fight, a sort of a music playoff? Scrabble.
Sorry, you're suggesting that the 7 men of the Pogues would lose in a fight. To 9, we'll call it 9.
I'm saying the 9 men of Everton would lose a fight to the 7 men.
Tim Cahill is in that Everton team.
And Yakubu as well.
Well, he wasn't on the field that time, so we'll have to exclude him.
Well, we'll say the Pogues, are the Pogues allowed to use their instruments as weapons?
I don't think it's going to be an issue. I'm backing Everton all the way on this one. I've not seen the Pogues of late, but judging by the number of teeth they've lost over the year, I guess they've been on the receiving end a little bit too much. But my point about Arsenal being, whatever it was, 5 points, you say, behind, with half a season to go, that's great, but you've got to make those 5 points up somewhere along. Losing a game like this doesn't just mean that you fall behind. It means you lack the capability to make those points up, because you're going to need to make them up against your rivals. And if you consistently lose games against your rivals, That's why this is a last chance or last chance-ish encounter for Arsenal.
But since Sky invented football in 1992...
God bless him.
Only seven times out of 18 have the team who were top at Christmas won the league. Right.
Sorry, only 17 out of...
Out of 18... Football was invented 18 seasons ago.
Right.
On seven occasions, the team who's top of Christmas have gone on to win the league.
Only seven?
Yeah. Manchester United have come from fifth to win it. Arsenal have come from sixth at Christmas to win it. And fifth to, at Christmas to win it. So, you know, it's...
What about over the last 4 years, though?
Over the last 4 years, it's been Chelsea, Liverpool, Man U, Arsenal, Man U. So,
Generally, the trend increasingly is, though, if the teams to start fast, not this season, but and to hold on.
Twice in 4 years it's happened. So,
well, Chelsea under Mourinho twice did it. They sort of kicked that ahead, I think, the season after, and then United at the top of Christmas. Well, so isn't it 5 out of 7?
Wow. Well, you're moving the goalposts now just to see.
I don't know about Pogues and Everton, but
no. But I think no one's saying that who's on top of Christmas is decisive. Right. I think the question is, how good are you, and you are measured by playing other good teams. And if you consistently fall short of their standards, then that's very ominous as far as winning the league is concerned. And that's why it's a big game for Arsenal.
Mm. All right, then.
Sorry to answer your question.
Yeah.
Sunderland probably won't be. United at Old Trafford, because no Steve Bruce team has ever beaten Manchester United since he left them, and as a player, and Danny Welbeck won't be playing because
will he not?
The terms of his loan deal mean that he's ruled out.
Right. I always forget about that funny clause.
Yeah, it's not a clause I'm...
Ooh, well, Sean's got excited because we just mentioned clause close to December the 25th. Go on,
Sean. That was deliberate, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't.
Wasn't it?
No. Barry.
That doesn't matter.
All right. Good. We'll be back in a second or two once we've just refreshed ourselves and had a long, long, hard look at ourselves in the mirror, that kind of thing, with part two, in which we'll be talking about other equally unimportant leagues around Europe.
Football Weekly Extra on guardian.co.uk.
Barry.
Yes.
Yeah. We need to hook you up to an electrocardiogram and just say words, see which what elicits the biggest flutter.
Sorry, it's just today. I think I've finally...
It's the Pogues, isn't it? Everything else must seem very, very drab after the excitement of seeing the Pogues.
Well, not really. I see them every Christmas. Right. It's sort of a tradition.
You went ice skating as well, didn't you, yesterday?
I did.
It was just a big winter wonderland for you yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah, I went ice skating. I'm not very good at ice skating.
It's not really the point, though, is it?
And I came a cropper once, but not particularly spectacularly. I was brought down by... some woman who cut across me.
Right. Now you're being brought down by talking about men. Yeah.
I was going to say there's probably about 90,000 people out there that would want to be that woman.
Really?
I reckon.
To take down Barry Glendinning. All right. Okay.
It's a bit harsh. Are we about to talk about Rafa Benitez? Because if we are, I have a question.
All right.
Has he actually been sacked?
As far as I know, he hasn't. Rafael?
As far as I know, he has.
Oh.
Via email.
Via email?
Yeah.
Okay, but they're trying to rescind the contract.
Maybe he hasn't received his email yet.
Well,
but an email was sent, apparently, yesterday morning.
Because they have to agree the terms, no? I think the intention has been announced, but they haven't actually agreed terms yet. But anyway, I mean, I think it's a done deal.
I'm sure it's all about legalities, as it often is with getting rid of managers, because if you fire them, then you have to pay out the whole contract. If you say, we offer you a different job, like greenkeeper or something, then... You can negotiate the terms.
Somewhere in their catering department, perhaps?
Yeah. Well,
isn't the general thing in Syria to keep them on the payroll and just continue paying?
Because you often bring them back a couple of weeks later and the new guy doesn't work out. Yeah, I don't want to discuss Rafa too much. I mean, we've gone into the kind of the pros and cons and all that before. A couple of comments. Moby Bad says, would the pod agree he's basically been a bumbling mess ever since Paco Ayestarán left his side? Paco is there for all his triumphs. Should he be credited as the power behind the throne? It is curious how that does represent a watershed in Rafa's career, no? The Paco and then after Paco. And where is he now, Ayestarán? Does anyone know? Olive says, I'm not surprised that Rafa's gone. Inter must be looking for someone a bit more suited to a big club and with Big Sam in the market, no? ... Very nice. Although the current favourite for the Inter role does seem to be Leonardo, who wants to bring Kaká with him. That would be fun, wouldn't it?
It's strange, because Leonardo never seemed to me to naturally want to be Milan manager. He almost accepted it out of almost gratitude for what Milan had done to him.
I think the key word there is Milan manager, or Milan manager, because I don't think he's a big fan of Berlusconi. He's a very thoughtful man, very considered man, Leonardo, and certainly the words with which he departed the Rossoneri about Berlusconi's like Narcissus, anything that doesn't look like his own reflection he doesn't like, were pretty clear about how he felt about his former employer. So, yeah, I think he wasn't desperate to step into Carlo Ancelotti's shoes for all sorts of obvious reasons. He probably looked at the squad and thought, this is going to be tricky to make it work, and indeed it was. Inter, though, he might feel different about it. I think from a prospective manager's point of view, you could see this is a very good time to be joining Inter. You don't have the big expectations that were there in the immediate post-Mourinho period. You've got a lot of big players just coming back from injury, like Milito, like Thiago Motta, Maicon as well. You've got Ranocchio, one of the best young Italian defenders, who is almost certainly joining Inter in the January transfer window. The only question would be, though, there does seem to be this feeling in the kind of Nerazzurri camp that what they needed... There was some comment that filtered out from the dressing room about the players basically had been driven on like donkeys under Mourinho, and now that kind of that stick wasn't there anymore, and that's why they've all gone slack. So the question is, does Leonardo have a big enough stick? But the Italians are getting very excited about it, especially this idea, as I say, that he wants to bring Kaká with him, because they're both kind of...
Yeah, I think it's a very bad time to join Inter, because they're a team who have hemorrhaged money over the last couple of years. It's very clear policy from Moratti that you're going to have to rein in the spending. That's why they didn't spend big. That's why they're not going to be spending big in the years to come, because there's absolutely no way they can get anywhere near the financial fair play regulations with the losses that they had. So the new manager, whoever will be, will have to have a couple of years of transitional time with youngsters coming through and the older guys running their contracts down. There's got a lot of older players who have 1, 2, 3 years left. They're going to be left on, a little bit like Milan a couple of years ago, with the hope that the younger ones will come through. But there's not going to be a Kaká. There's not going to be any big signings because their money's not there.
Interesting. You mentioned the UEFA Fair Play thing. Inter, one of the many teams who look like they have no chance whatsoever of matching, of limboing their way under that legislative bar set by Platini. Man City, another one. I'm sure in Spain that Real Madrid will have one or two numbers to crunch before they can do that. Do you think it's actually going to... When is it actually meant to come into vigour?
It starts from season? 2012.
Okay.
And then there's a three-year period till 2015.
But do you think we're really going to see, given the names involved, do you think we're really going to see UEFA saying no, Real, Inter, Man City, to give three examples, you're not going to play in Europe?
I think so, because the clubs all agreed to this themselves, because they realised that they can't go on spending. That's the reason why it's been adopted in the first place. The clubs want UEFA to save themselves from themselves. Mm. The same reason why in the Premier League they've agreed to the 25 squad, because they realise that we are buying too many players, which we can't use. So it will happen. And you saw already that... was it Mallorca?
That was a different thing. It was basically about the fact that they were insolvent, no?
Yeah, but it's not really a different thing, because... You saw that UEFA had no qualms of just kicking them out of the competition.
Yeah, but that was Mallorca, not Real Madrid or Inter.
It's true, but a precedent has been set, and especially if a club like Inter makes the effort of meeting the financial fair play regulations, if then some other team won't, you'd have some very powerful figures putting pressure on UEFA to enforce these.
All right, I struggle to believe that Inter aren't going to go out and spend big money, but... I do take your point.
I'm guessing right now Barry's got the fairy tale of New York whirring through his head. So happy Christmas.
I love you, baby. No, I was thinking if these big clubs weren't allowed to play in Europe, isn't there a danger that then they would set up their own breakaway, perhaps European trad punk Irish fighting competition that might
who would win, Barry?
Steal the thunder. Well, I don't know.
Right. Barcelona, they look really tough.
They do look meaty, don't they? They've got Mascherano, though.
Carlos Puyol looks like he could.
All right, and of course Busquets, no stranger to getting in, you know, physical. That is an interesting question, though. Who would win an all-European Irish dirty fighting competition? Who is the hardest team in football? Sean?
I think Stoke would be up there, wouldn't
it? Do you think? I don't think.
Hoof's a big lad.
Tunshine, no.
We're talking like pub brawl.
Yeah.
God.
Shall we come back to this one? Yeah. That's for part three. Okay, excellent. Raphael, having rubbished my theories, let's hear yours on the Bundesliga now.
I haven't got any.
Yeah. It's been exciting midweek cup action there in Germany.
I think exciting is an understatement.
Very exciting.
Bayern, of course, went to Stuttgart last Sunday, won 5-3. They went to Stuttgart again last night and won
6-3.
6-3.
All right.
Just to ruin the symmetry.
Yeah.
A crazy, insane match. Two sendings off for Stuttgart. They missed a penalty. They hit the bar. Bayern were 2-0 up. It was back to 2-2. Bayern were 3-2 up. It was back to 3-3. It was just insane, a really, really insane match, and all capped off by Bastian Schweinsteiger going to the referee saying, please don't send off my opponent.
Oh.
When it was 3-2 for 3-2 to Bayern.
Why?
Khalid Boularouche, not a stranger to getting sent off and then dirty tackles, made a tackle. It was his second yellow card. Referee straight away showed him yellow and red, and Schweinsteiger said, he touched me, but it wasn't that bad. It shouldn't have been a yellow card.
Right. And what did
the referee didn't take back his decision. Oh. He said, it's my decision to make. It was a foul, and I can decide whether it's yellow or not.
And at this time of year as well, ref, have a heart.
But it was pretty amazing to see that happen.
Yeah.
And
was he winking as he did it? Did he say, ref?
Send
them winking,
off. No, he was already sent off, so there was nothing to gain. Right. He was already sent off. Oscar Cologne getting knocked out. Wolfsburg, as we said, getting knocked out.
Yeah, Wolfsburg, yeah. Now, Steve McClown's Wolfsburg, Raphael, were knocked out of the German Cup round of 16 by a humiliating 3-1 home defeat to a second division side, Energie Cottbus. Don't know if you're aware of any of this. Wolfsburg, who have not won any of their past seven league matches, languish in 13th place. They were 3-0 down at half-time, thanks to two goals from the striker Nils Pedersen.
Mm.
And this was, it was at the weekend, wasn't it? The fans all opened umbrellas. No?
They didn't really. I mean, a couple of fans did. Yeah, a couple of them were waving umbrellas.
Was it raining?
It was bad weather. And I think one or two people might have jumped to conclusions thinking
there was a photo of all of them with their Wolfsburg umbrellas up, and it was a bit of a signal, wasn't it?
All of them.
Yeah.
It
was a mass formation umbrella.
I passed a woman on the street this morning who had an umbrella up. I didn't. Oh, gosh, she wants McLaren out.
Right. Yeah.
It was raining.
Up until last night, the general feeling was that the team is to blame, that McLaren is just unlucky because he's inherited a team who are really difficult to control. Lots of big egos on big money who, like Jekyll Peps, want to be somewhere else. And the man of the first half was so shocking, the man of the performance, that Dieter Hoeneß, who's been one of McLaren's staunchest defendants, was himself shocked and said, we can't just go on after this half. I've never seen something as bad as this. And of course, the easy thing to do is to get rid of the manager, especially after six draws in a row in the league. And it looks as if by the time you hear this, listeners, Steve McLaren might be available for other
jobs. This time of year as well.
Yeah.
It's funny how so many managers get the boot at this time of year.
Well, they get the boot all times.
Yeah, you
just don't notice it as much. Right. But it is a bit of a shame because Hoeneß really wanted to hold on to him for as long as possible. But the first 45 minutes were so bad that they were construed, I think, as a bit of a cry for help from the team that we can't go on like this. And I think he'll bite the bullet.
Interesting. Very good. We'll have more top continental tales right after this on Football Weekly Extra.
Hello.
Sid.
Hello, Sid. James, how are you?
I'm ever so well, Sid.
I'm just on this week's classic YouTube watching the Lekpon and under-12s against Tottenham, and it's hilarious.
Oh, right. Well, what happened?
It's really, really funny. Basically, it's an under-12s game, and you've got, I don't know, a crowd of maybe 2,000 Lech Poznan fans treating it as if it's a European Cup final, and these poor kids. That's brilliant.
Oh, lovely. Oh, okay.
The best one, I don't know whether you included it, is the mixed martial artist, who's won a bout, lifts his hand up to celebrate, and then has a massive chunder everywhere. It's unbelievable. And there's another good one with the Chinese hurdler.
So you've got hurling and hurdling.
Yes.
Yeah, go on.
Very good. There's a very small Chinese person.
Right, what's he doing hurdling?
Well, I don't know, but he's in a race and he's running and he tries to do the first one,
right.
Fails. So then decides just to crash through the right. rest of them and he's charged along, crash, crash, crash. He nearly ends up winning as well, though he starts veering dramatically to the left and almost takes out a couple of the other
right.
runners.
So you've got an intensely small person trying to compete with much bigger people. It sounds almost like a metaphor for Spanish football. Thiago, I noticed it was tight as ever this week, just the 8 goals for Real Madrid against Levante.
Hey, don't knock it, James. In the Copa del Rey, a team scored 8, another team scored 5, another team scored 4, and a team scored naught, and it was Barcelona.
Yeah, how did that happen, Sid? How?
Athletic Bilbao defended very well. They defended very, very deep. They did a little bit of an Inter Milan-style job on Barcelona. They effectively passed up the opportunity to try and score in order to just stop Barcelona. Barcelona also being a Copa del Rey game, started with both David Villa and Leo Messi on the bench, although they both came on. And it just was a little bit reminiscent of that kind of frustrating game against Inter Milan, a little bit maybe even reminiscent of the back end of the Frank Rijkaard years when there was all the control but not really very much cutting edge. And of course that's hugely surprising because in the last few weeks Barcelona have had loads and loads of cutting edge. But again, I think we come back to tactically at least something that's familiar in all these games is if Barcelona score early, they'll probably score an awful lot, but they obviously need to score early to draw the other team out a little bit, which is a bit maybe what happened to Spain in the World Cup to some extent.
Mm. Going back to Real Madrid and their massive win against Levante, biggest win of Jose Mourinho's career, and on the surface everything seems to be going swimmingly there, but there are stories now of some kind of behind-the-scenes battle going on between Mourinho and Jorge Valdano, to the extent that Mourinho was forced to deny rumours that he was thinking of getting out of Real Madrid. Cathal Culé, saying Mourinho is on the way out of Madrid. Same thing happened at Chelsea. He's afraid of getting spanked again by Barca. He will not be managing Madrid in the return leg of the Clásico.
He will be managing Madrid in the return leg of the Clásico, but that doesn't disguise the fact that there are some problems. Very interesting, James. As you said, the 8-0 last night was Jose Mourinho's biggest ever victory as a coach. It's only 3 weeks now since his biggest ever defeat as a coach. So things are kind of really swinging around for him at Real Madrid. This comes from the press conference that I told you about on Monday, when Jose Mourinho used the opportunity of his post-match press conference in the game against Sevilla to have a go at the referee, but also more than anything else to have a go at certain members of the club and to have a go at what he said, or he felt at least, was a lack of defence for his players from certain elements of the club. And it was very clear that he was pointing the finger at Jorge Valdano, a man who it has been a secret, but it's been a pretty poorly guarded one. The two of them are so different that they were never likely to be particularly close. And the key, I suppose, the key phrase from Jose Mourinho post-game on Sunday night was something about, he said that he wanted to speak to the president, and then he pointed out that the president is the number one, I have a good relationship with him, and if I can speak to number one, why would I speak to anyone else at the club? And I think it was very clearly him saying, I don't want to talk to Jorge Valdano. There's a series of things that he's irritated with Valdano about. One of them is what he believes Valdano's failure to protect him and protect his players. The other is the failure of Valdano to buy Jose Mourinho the centre-forward that he so desperately wants in the winter transfer window.
A couple of tweets here for you, Sid. Jimmy Jazz is all over that Premier League Liga rivalry. He says, well, your opinions, first of all, on Andy Gray and Richard Keys' chat last Monday about Barcelona not being able to cope with Stoke. I don't know if anybody told you about this. I think Andy Gray's quote was, Messi is very good, but I'd like to see him do that at the Britannia Stadium.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually been sent the link now of the video and I haven't had the chance to watch it. So I'll be relatively careful about what I say because it does seem that possibly the remarks were not quite as unreasonable as they first seemed. But it's worth picking up on a few things. The first one, and I think Barry will confirm this to you, Andy Gray did a small talk interview, I think, with Barry some time ago in which he said that his role was to defend the Premier League and his role was to promote the Premier League. To which my response would be, it isn't, or at least it shouldn't be. Your role should be to commentate honestly on what you see and honestly on the football that happens in front of you. You don't actually work for the Premier League, even if you do work for the TV company that largely funds it. But let's respond to the other questions. The notion that Leo Messi would find it uncomfortable going to Stoke and Barcelona would find it uncomfortable going to Stoke. First of all, there's not too many teams that find it very comfortable going to Stoke. The notion that I'd like to see him do it on a cold, wet night. Well,
First of all, that's about the most banal cliche of all time, the do it on a cold, wet night cliche. Secondly, you know what? There are parts of Spain that are actually quite cold sometimes. Mm. And then Leo Messi doesn't do it against English clubs, which will probably be why he didn't score against Manchester United in the Champions League final. It'll probably be why he didn't get four against Arsenal last year.
Right, but notice that he's still goalless against Stoke. That's my point.
Yeah,
Jimmy, it's true.
I think Leo Messi, you know, the jury is out on him until he goes to the Britannia Stadium and you know, produces a great performance.
Right. Jimmy Jazz also wants to know, how would Barca and Real fare in the Premier League, and how would Man United and Chelsea fare in the Liga? What do you think, Sid? What?
It's very difficult to know for sure, but
when you look at their relative
teams, the amount of money they've got behind them, the quality of the players they've got, I don't think I'd be pushing the boat out too far to say if Barcelona and Real Madrid, as they currently are, were in the Premier League as it currently is, would finish first and second.
As Sid, while we're doing hypothetical things here, just something we were discussing earlier, who do you think would win a fight between Everton down to 10 men and the Pogues?
But only 7 of the Pogues.
Only 7 of the Pogues.
Yeah,
but the Pogues minus Shane McGowan.
Shane McGowan's not in.
Well, if Shane McGowan's not there, they haven't got hope in hell, surely.
I don't think Shane McGowan, frankly, is going to do you much good in a fight, Sid. I think you've got
think
this fighting
he
business.
Because he might
he'd
not
fight
look
dirty
hard.
And he'd have a glass in his hand with which to attack.
Exactly. He might not look hard, but he's one of those guys who's got absolutely nothing to lose, particularly teeth, and therefore he'd have no problem whatsoever.
All right, well, you're wrong on that one,
he'd,
Sid.
He'd be down on the floor biting at your knackers and fighting really dirty.
Right. Okay, and on a football note, the Football Log says, can somebody ask Sid Lowe if other 18 teams in the league have picked a dream team, i.e. pooled their best talent, I think he means, would they be top two? Interesting. If you pulled a dream team from the rest of the league, could they beat Barca and Real?
Last year I might have said yes, but the departure of David Villa to Barcelona and David Silva to Manchester City, and the strengthening of both Barcelona and Real Madrid in the summer, I would argue no, because essentially the pooling of talent from the other teams would be Villarreal plus one or two others, and I still don't think they'd quite make it.
All right. Sid, Feliz Navidad, and we're going to be back on... When is it, Sean?
Next Thursday.
So,
no rest for the wicked, eh?
No rest for the wicked.
Well,
not much rest for the very slightly wicked.
Yeah, we'll be back then to kind of discuss... stuff, I'm not quite sure what, but the things. Oh, all the Christmas football in England, and you'll have to find some things of your own to talk about, because we'd like to speak to you then. But in the meantime, I hope that Christmas comes and leaves you happier than ever, Sid, and we'll speak to you next week.
Cheers.
And with that, he was gone. On to the rest of the Boxing Day fixture list, Barry Glendenning. Some huge matches there at the bottom of the table. How about that Fulham West Ham matchup? Fulham, only goal difference keeping them out of the drop zone. West Ham, bottom of the table.
Yeah, it should be a great game.
Yeah, okay. Fulham have only won one of their last 14 Premier League meetings with the Hammers.
We've talked about Mancini earlier. He's not under much pressure, even though, you know, City are only performing as well as they did last year. I think Avram Grant should be under more pressure. I think Mark Hughes should be under more pressure. But again, you know, we have that kind of sucking at the top of the table, also is there at the bottom. So you've got West Ham having only won 2 out of 18, Fulham having only won 2 out of...
It's one of Frank Lampard's holiday videos you're talking about.
You know, that sort of sucking together of teams at the top.
Oh.
You know, it's very, very, very tight at the bottom.
You're not helping, are you?
But, you know, I think Avram Grant, if in a normal season, having won 2 out of 18, he probably would have been gone by now.
Will Rob Green be playing this weekend? Because he missed
to...
the last one. That tremendously named Rude Boffin came in. But just because of this Clint Dempsey-Rob Green reunion. And Clint always scores against Rob Green. He scored in his last 3 matches for Club and Country against the Robster. Interesting. I don't know. I see West Ham maybe... I always think they're going to do something. But they're not, are they? No, Rafa's shaking his head. They're not going to do anything.
About 2 very poor teams. I wouldn't be.
I think Fulham, you could argue, are in a little bit of a forced position because they've played reasonably well in most of the games that I've seen, at least. Mm. I mean, they haven't always been getting the reward and make silly mistakes. West Ham have been pretty abject, even right. In the 2 games that they did win, you could say they weren't very, very impressive. So I'd make Fulham favourites, which means that West Ham will win.
All right. Okay, this is the second of the 3 games that Avram Grant had to win. He got a point at Blackburn previously. We shall see. Wolves against Wigan, meantime. The other 2 bottom 3 teams are head-to-head at Molineux.
I think Wolves should win that.
Right.
What I've seen of them this season, they're nowhere near bad enough to be second from bottom, but obviously they haven't been getting the results. But if they're continue to play like they did during the first half of the season, I don't think they'll be in any danger of being relegated. But obviously this would be a huge match to win, because it would catapult them out of the relegation zone and give them a huge surge of confidence.
With half the season to go, Barry, surely it means nothing.
It would mean a lot to them. It's a lot harder to get out of the bottom than it is to make your way up the top.
Wolves have won the last two at home. So there you go. Everton are taking on Birmingham, fresh from their City win, and they won at St Andrews earlier in the season. Birmingham haven't won at Everton since 1957. Will the Toffees' resurgence, will it continue, do you think, Sean? Yes or no? Anything you want to say about that?
Quite possibly. I mean, the only thing that's perhaps worth pointing out is Paul Doyle, who's seen a lot of Birmingham this season, thinks they're going to go down. And
really?
He's written a blog on the website today.
That's interesting.
I personally think if you're going to look for an outsider to go down, Blackburn are more interesting.
What kind of odds would you get on Blackburn?
Well, they were, I think, 10 or 12 to 1 last week. They're now into 7.
But they were 50 to 1 not long ago.
Well, they were 51. They're still 51 to finish bottom.
Oh, bottom, is it?
But you look at Blackburn, you've got Samba saying he wants to leave. You've got an unhappy camp. You've got the fact that Blackburn have got to play 7 out of 8 of the teams around them away from home in the next half of the season. And you've got a very inexperienced manager who, you know, everyone says nice things about, but if you've got a board and a chairman at war and the players unhappy, it's going to be a big ask.
The thing is, it's so close a season that you could look at Newcastle on 22 points. That's only 9 points more than West Ham. That all of them, teams from them down, could still be in the relegation fight.
Blackburn, it is interesting. Not everybody's saying nice things now about Steve Keane. There's a certain feeling that he might not have been entirely innocent in Big Sam's departure, because Big Sam certainly hinting at that with some comments he made this week. Steve Keane, a man that he brought into the Rovers setup, I believe, before being ousted as part of this kind of Kentaro fried chicken type thing anyway. But you mentioned Christoph Samba's remarks, and talking about Balotelli before and how refreshing it is to hear a Premier League player speak his mind. That's very forthright stuff from Samba, who said, if this is the way the club's going to be run from now on, I don't want to be part of it and I want to leave. A lot of players, including those who didn't get on with Big Sam, Ryan Nelson, straight after the game against West Ham, saying, you know, obviously it's the Venky group's right to do what they want to do, but it's really confusing for us that they don't seem to have a plan.
Well, people forget that when Big Sam took over, they're in 19th position, Blackburn. They only won, I think, 3 games that season. Big Sam, them basically, Blackburn are a journeyman team. They have been for a while, and Allardyce, like him, loathe him, he did a very good job there. Asking a novice manager to keep that going is a big ask.
Particularly when they had said they were going to get rid of him and bring in somebody with Premier League experience, and that Steve Keane was going to be in the position until they could sort that out. And then he flies over to India at the start of this week, right at the start of an intensely busy period, and comes back with the job until the end of the season. It's perplexing.
Something smells funny, and it's not just the fried chicken.
Indeed so, Sean Ingle.
But surely if company takes or buys a club, whatever our opinion on it, they are entitled to have whoever they want managing their side.
Indeed
they are entitled to get a manager in who, you know, if they don't like the current manager's style, Big Sam, they're entitled to get rid of him, and the players, whether they like it or not, should just put up with it.
Is there not something to be said, though, that the rules should be in place that if you do take over a football club, you should at least have some sort of love of the game?
How are you going to measure that?
Well, the fit and proper persons test is one way of doing it.
Yeah, because that's such a huge success.
Well, it hasn't done, but you know, Barry's taken a very postmodern
view. Give him a quiz on kind of the Football League from 18, whatever.
But when you have, Versailles coming out and saying, oh, you know, I never watched a football match until 4 weeks ago, and then, we can finish fourth or fifth. I mean,
surely the idea, and Blatter would go along with this, is to attract new people, new money to the game the whole time. So it's exciting that they
can't believe you're using Sepp Blatter's support on an argument.
Yeah, don't then. Good, but right. Yep, the Christmas spirit prevailing here once again in the pod.
No, but Sean's been all happy, clappy and guardian again about this. I mean, if I buy a club, I'll put whoever I want in charge of it. they'll play however I think they should play. I'm obviously not going to be dictating tactics or ringing the manager at half-time or anything.
Why not?
I would get a manager whose style of play I admire.
You'd sign the Pogues and get them to go out there and be midfield battlers, probably.
Yeah.
All right. And that's all fine, Barry. And nobody's saying it's illegal what Venky are doing. We're just saying that they're doing a really bad job of running the football club, we think. Now, we might be proved wrong.
What have they done wrong so far? Not a thing, as far as I can see. They got rid of Allardyce. Everyone's a winner.
All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see. Well,
like, having to pay money to watch a team managed by him, you should be on a wage to pay.
But
the
thing is that, as Sean has said, love him or love him, he has done the job, or possibly the best job possible with that team, especially after what they've said about finishing fourth and fifth. But then at the same time saying, actually, we don't have a lot of money to invest.
Yeah,
it just shows you that there's very muddled thinking going on.
I just want to add two Sid Lowe's caveats to what I said earlier. I don't want to see anyone lose their job, but I'm sure Allardyce has been well recompensed for being sacked. And B, I can't remember what the other thing was.
All right.
You know, oh, yeah, sorry.
More
yeah.
on that story.
Blackburn fans will point out, oh, our style of play isn't that bad. We don't get as many yellow cards as people say. But that's because they never get the yellow cards for this thing, you know, knocking goalkeepers out of the way at corners, right. Dragging defenders out of position, blah, blah, blah.
The thing is, because it's Blackburn is a club that's not run a lot of money ever since Jack Walker died. The possibility of them going down could well mean the end of Blackburn Rovers as we know it. So it's not just a case of, let's just let the new owners do whatever they want. I'm sure it's fine. The people are generally worried that their club will be destroyed by owners who don't know anything about what they're doing.
Well, there you go. Far be it from us to criticise people for engaging in activities they know nothing about. But there you go. That's the situation at Blackburn, which is a great concern to all followers of the game. Except for that one over there. Now, Blackburn...
I don't know where this concern for Blackburn Rovers has come from all of a sudden. No one gave it two hoots about
That's
them.
That's true. That is true. They're hosting Stoke this weekend. So there you go. Blackpool, in the meantime, are hosting Liverpool. Blackpool, of course, probably their brightest moment so far this season was their 2-1 win at Anfield. And they are unbeaten in four. So could be further problems there for... we could see Roy Hodgson treating his face like a piece of Parmigiano and his hands like a cheese grater again. You saw that extraordinary bit of footage there. Yeah, there. Best wishes to Roy. And Bolton and taking on West Ham and then Aston Villa up against Spurs. That's the
talking
boxing.
About managers under pressure. All right. I think Gerard Houllier has only got so many more defeats to go before they will lose patience with him because, you know, they look as if they're a side who are well capable of going down, even though, of course, they look too good to go down. But this is a team, this is a league where nobody is that good, either on one side or on the other side of the table.
I wouldn't say Aston Villa look too good to go down at all. They're terrible.
All of 4 points between them and the drop at the moment, and a lot of other candidates for those three prized seats on the journey down to the championship. Do you know, I think that probably wraps things up for our special Boxing Day preview. So that's it for this Football Weekly Extra. We'll be back on Thursday the 30th, with a special year-ending show, rounding up all the many, many games that will be played between now and then, and probably throwing in a bit of a look back at the year. Speaking of which, as I mentioned back at the start, remember that... that special Football Weekly look back at the last 12 months of football video will be up on Monday in place of the usual pod offering. So
we recorded that so long ago, I can't even remember what I said, so I'd like to... I probably disagree with everything
really?
I've said on it.
All right. I probably disagree with everything Ben told me to say. Yeah. Anyway, many thanks then for joining us today. Sean Ingle, Barry Glendenning and Raphael Honigstein. Happy Christmas, one and all, and we'll catch you just before the new year. Goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.